Hello everyone. You're very welcome along on this latest audio walk from Open Country with me, Tom. I think this is the first audio walk that I've ever started recording from the comfort of my own car. I'm currently parked in a lay-by on the moors high above Nidderdale. The rain is pitter-pattering on the windscreen and on the roof, and the mist is engulfing me. It's one of those days where I'm reluctant to open the door and start walking. But I think I've got to overcome that initial reluctance, because I think it's days like this, in locations like this, that really show off the true beauty and bleakness of the moorland landscape. So come on, let's don our waterproofs, brave the weather, and see what we can find as we walk a 5.5 mile loop around Fountains Earth Moor. So here we go. It seems like we're actually braving this. It's hard to believe that I'm actually recording this audio walk on a midsummer's day. My clothing would suggest something maybe more autumnal or even wintry. I've got my Wellington boots on, my over trousers, and a thick waterproof winter coat. I've also got my umbrella up, which I'm doing my best to point into the prevailing wind, which is lashing the rain across the moorland towards my face. It's also hopefully going to do a decent job of keeping my recording equipment dry. Even the hardy moorland sheep in the field over to our right are finding it difficult as they hunker down behind a dry stone wall. Above it, there's a wire fence, and all I can see along the wire of fence is a line of drips. Somewhere out there is the moorland landscape, but at the moment I can't see it for the rim of my umbrella and the mist which is forever closing in around us. I suppose I ought to get going and moving a little bit before I feel like I need to put some gloves on as well. We're currently walking along what's known as a drover's track. Now, in the good old days, these tracks would have been used by the farmers to drive their sheep from the rich moorland pastures to the markets and farmland in the valleys below. Today, the tracks are not only used as footpaths for walkers like us, but they're also used to access the moor for the grouse shooting season, which starts in the middle of August. And also this track that we're walking along now is used by a company that offers off-road Land Rover driving experiences. As I'm wandering along the track, I'm imagining those farmers driving their sheep at all times of year and in all different sorts of conditions. I'm sure that they did it in conditions very similar to the ones that we're walking in today. I bet they didn't have top-to-toe waterproofs and umbrellas to keep them sheltered. It really would have been a very bleak existence and experience. And a far cry from the cosy surroundings of a Land Rover that may pass us at any moment. Not that I'm jealous of the people in them in any way, shape or form. I'd much rather be out here being lashed by the rain. when you think of a moorland landscape, you often think of not much here, quite bleak and flat in terms of horizon lines stretching off into the distance. But one of the things that I always find breaks up that monotony is the colour. I mean, even on a day like today, where there's mist rolling in and there's rain careering past the front of our eye line, the colours on the moorland floor are absolutely incredible. Different shades of green, different shades of orange and ochre and almost purple as the flowers on the heather start to come through. There's even a blackened area in front of us that has been charred by a moorland fire. And as far as I can see, which granted, given the mist and rain, isn't that far, there's just a wash of colour that is lifting the surroundings and also lifting my heart as well. As I'm making my way into the prevailing wind and rain, I've been trying to think whether there's just one word that I could use to sum up the landscape around me. And the word that I've come up with is sublime. Now, when you think of the word sublime, you probably think absolutely perfect or flawless. But the actual definition of sublime is beauty that draws you in, but also has some kind of foreboding nature to it as well. We've reached a point in this track where, other than the track leading us in the direction that we want to be going in, there's no other markers on the landscape to differentiate any point of interest or any point that we've come from or going to. There's no real man-made structure. It almost feels like I could be the only person in the world at this moment in time. I know I'm probably the only person on the moor, because who on earth would be stupid enough to come out in these conditions? And I think that feeling would be quite nerve-wracking for many people, being the only person around, being quite vulnerable to not only the conditions, but the fact that we're out in this bleak location. But there's something, the beauty in the bleakness around us, that is drawing me in and tempting me further along this track, venturing off into the mist and the unknown. So that's why I think that word sublime is a good defining word to give a sense of what I'm experiencing out on this walk today. After walking for a good mile or so without any man-made markers on the landscape, we've come across a little shooting lodge. It's a stone-built building with a slate roof. Sorry, I've just paused because a kestrel has just taken off from just in front of the building and is now swooping off into the mist over the moorland. Anyway, back to the shooting lodge. It was built in 1972 as a handy little date stone that's carved out with a moniker of a fox on it and the date. And it's used by people who come grouse shooting during August and September, which is the height of the season. Today it's all boarded up, which is a shame because it would have been nice to get a little bit of shelter. There's obviously a heater or a log burner in there because there's a chimney protruding from the one gable end. And as I look out across the moorland, in amongst the mist and the rain, I can just about make out some circular stone-built grouse butts, which are where the people who come grouse shooting will hunker down and train their weapons across the moorland. I imagine on an August day, which is maybe a little bit brighter than this, this landscape, instead of echoing with the sound of rain hitting my umbrella or the odd curlew or grouse call, echoes with the sound of gunshots. As the grouse butts fade away into the moorland mist, on the horizon I can just about make out the outline of two standing stone structures. These two stones have got a rather unusual name. They're called Jenny Twig and Her Daughter Tib. They form part of a wider craggy area known as Spireland Crags, but because these are two so distinctive stones, they've got this very distinctive and unusual name. Nobody really knows where the name came from, but there are a few stories that have been told over the years. One of them is that Jenny is the name of the Queen of the Fairies, and she put these stones here to guard over their kingdom. Another rather gruesome tale tells of Jenny Twig owning a pub in a valley nearby, and after somebody tried to steal from the pub, her and her daughter chased them over the moor as they tried to escape, and then brutally murdered them. As I say, both of them sound reasonably far-fetched, but such is the nature of folklore. And I think one of the most endearing things about these rocks is that maybe we will never know where the name came from, but it doesn't stop us from being intrigued by them and their weathered and worn nature. The truth of it is that these rocks have probably been here for longer than names have ever existed, and it's just nice to revel in their unusual beauty. If you look at the shape of this walk laid out on a map, it's sort of an uneven triangle. We've now walked down one of the sides of the triangle, and we've made an abrupt right turn onto another as we head down towards the point at the bottom end of the moor. Whereas before the wind and the rain were lashing into our faces, it's now coming from directly behind. Now, I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I suppose one benefit is that I can now see where I'm going, because my umbrella is now neatly propped on my shoulder, sheltering us from the wind and rain coming directly up behind us. But we've got this clear view. Well, I say clear, it's as clear as the mist will allow, as we can see the track that we're walking along winding away into the mist beyond. What little light we have is glinting off the rivers of water that are running down the tracks at either side that have been worn away by the vehicles that have ploughed up and down here. Again, that sublime feeling is surrounding me. The landscape seems to be clearing a little bit all of a sudden. I was beginning to wonder whether it was the rain easing off, but to be honest, I think it's probably because we've just come below the cloud line and the mist is hanging above us now rather than around us. It's still not 100% clear by any stretch of the imagination, but we can now see the outline of the moorland in front of us. The track leading away to a forest of trees in the distance. Every so often, it's carved up by stretching dry stone walls that are crisscrossing the undulating hilly scape. Every time I see walls like that, I think it must have been an amazing feat to build all of them in the first place, let alone keep them going for the many hundreds of years that they've probably been standing. The landscape itself actually looks like a watercolour painting. It's not as defined as it would be on a beautifully bright sunny summer's day. It's more impressionistic. And all of that is just adding to the beautifully bleak atmosphere that we're walking through today. As I hoped when I left the car earlier on, all of that is overshadowing the fact that I'm getting rather damp. It goes to show how wet it is when you put your hood up underneath your brolly. The slugs seem to be enjoying themselves though today. In fact, it's got to a point where I've really had to watch my step down this part of the track as to not stand on one of them. The woods that we saw earlier on the distant horizon are much closer now, and I must admit the shelter of them seems rather appealing. But we have now met the point in which we turn onto the next side of our triangle that we're walking today. As I turn to my left, as well as the continuing driving rain, I can see the walled track that we're about to walk on winding its way up back onto the bleak moorland above, again shrouded in that mist. I've just decided to pause next to this rather sad looking foxglove, which is adding a vibrant splash of purplish magenta colour to otherwise monochromatic surroundings, even though it is drooping under the weight of the raindrops falling down its petals and leaning away from that prevailing wind. It looks very much how I feel at the moment, vibrant and buoyed by my surroundings, but rather browbeaten by the weather. We're now winding our way up the final side of our uneven triangle, and up is definitely the operative word. As we were walking down the other side, I didn't realise how steep this section of moorland was, but from the vantage point that we've got here, we've got a perfect view of how steep it actually is. To our left, we've got the track winding up the side of the hill face, and to our right, we've got the looming rocks of Spiland Crags that I mentioned earlier on. We haven't quite got to Jenny Twig and her daughter Tib just yet, but the rocks themselves looming on the horizon are really quite menacing as they sort of eke their way across the horizon line, breaking through the mist. The shapes of the formations are very much reminiscent of the rocks that you get at Brimham Rocks further down the valley of Nidderdale. They've obviously seen much more corrosive weather than even we're experiencing today over the millions of years that they've probably stood over this bleak area of Nidderdale. Well, if nothing else, that hill has certainly warmed me up. As I've been walking along, trying to peer under the rim of my umbrella, I've been seeing the odd flash of a moorland bird just making a dash for it in between the undergrowth and the walls that are lining the tracks and compartmentalising the land across the moorland landscape. Usually you would expect to hear the warbling, whistling cries of curlews and lapwing, and although I have seen curlews, it almost seems like it's too wet to be even bothered to try and make a sound today. The other specialist around these parts is the skylark, and again, the sound always reminds me of bright sunny days over farmland fields and moorland like this. I've seen the faint flutter of one or two, but again, the weather making them mute. As we come to the end of the final face of our triangle, we've once again entered into the cloud layer, and the mist has shrouded the landscape around us, and I'm back to that feeling of being the only person in the world. It's because of that feeling that I've really enjoyed this walk today, despite the conditions, and I hope you've enjoyed listening along to it as well, from your probably warm and dry surroundings. Not that you can detect any hint of jealousy there whatsoever. It just goes to show that no matter what the conditions are, landscapes will always show themselves in different and more intriguing and exciting ways. Yes, it would have been nice to come on a bright sunny day, but I probably wouldn't have experienced the true bleakness that the moorland can throw at you. And for me, that's really enhanced the experience and that feeling of the sublime nature of where we've been walking today. If you have enjoyed this audio walk, then please check out more at opencountry.org.uk and at Open Country Yorkshire on YouTube. But until the next audio walk, I'm going to head back to my car now and dry off as best I can. I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Thank you very much for listening.